irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
For the best in morning radio, tune in to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Wednesday, August 6th. We're back after a day's break.
We are.
God, I enjoyed sleeping in, let me tell you.
Actually, I didn't.
It's like I had to get up and then go back to sleep because I was going to come in and everything, but we had a phone guest. She was supposed to be in the studio, and then she said she was going to call because she's out of town. Thought, you know what? I'm just going to wait. Wait it through and stuff because... I still have that problem of sleeping late, you know. Going to sleep late, rather. Enough discussing that. How are you doing?
I'm good. I was going to say it baffles me that it's August 6th.
How
is it August 6th?
Yeah, I know.
I feel like it was my
already.
Birthday. It was in January, like a couple weeks ago. It's insane.
I know. The months are going by. They're saying next month they're going to introduce the new iPhone. Which is usually the time in September and stuff.
Right.
And then everybody rushes to get it around October, November, and you can't find one or anything. But they're going to have bigger screens. They're saying they're going to have two different models with different size screens. So that'll be
interesting. So one that's normal and then
Not normal. Actually, they're both going to be bigger than what it is now.
Oh.
Yeah.
One will just be a little bit smaller.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah. One is... One is 4.7, which now it's like 4 inches. So one's going to be 4.7. The other one, I think, 5 point something. So
wow, that's significantly bigger.
I know, it is. And I'm not sure I like that. I'm already going to go for the small one because the bigger ones are too bulky. You know, when you look at those Android phones that are huge.
Yeah, it's like a freaking iPad.
Oh, yeah, like a tablet or something.
Hold it up to your ear.
I know, that's what they're doing. They're sort of like mixing tablets and phones now.
Right.
You know, to sort of like come up with something in between. But I don't know that there's a need for it, but
just
I guess they do.
More screen to break.
Yeah, exactly.
More screen to shatter. And guaranteed they'll have a different charger with this one too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably every time they're going to do this, right? I know. Yeah. Change everything again.
Yeah.
I know. They do that all the time.
But at least that'll mean the iPhone 5 charger will reduce in value.
Yeah.
So at least that one will be cheaper.
Yeah. Which one do you have, the 4S or
the
5?
Five?
Oh, you have the 5.
I think I have the 5S.
Oh, well, I'll tell you which one you have. Do you have a fingerprint?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a
5S.
Right. It's a 5S. It's so simple. You should use it. You don't even have to put your number in.
I don't even have a code.
Really?
Someone wants to steal my phone. Just
yeah, it makes you lazy to do it. Yeah. But all your stuff is on there. That's what you have to remember. It's not that they're just going to take a phone and you can buy another one. Like some people, their whole life is in the phone.
I have that Find My Phone app, though.
Yeah.
Where you can... Kill switch. Yeah, and if someone steals your phone, you can look on the app.
Right.
And find out where your phone
find
is.
Find where
you
they
can
are.
Locate it.
Right.
It's kind of crazy.
It is.
Yeah. But... I don't know. It's like I use my phone so much.
I know. It's like too much of a hassle. I know. That's why I do with the fingerprint. It takes 2 seconds and bam, you know. You don't have to do it so much.
Maybe I'll have to try.
Yeah, it's just like you hold your hand like you would press the button anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So that works. I don't know. but yeah, I mean, you know, I've been reading they're thinking of like serious ways to do away with passwords and have other ways to identify yourself, because passwords is a pretty lame way to protect identity.
Right.
And they just said that a bunch of Russian criminals stole 1.2 billion passwords from 420,000 websites.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost the whole friggin' internet, you know?
I mean, how do you do that on a computer? It's not like you can put your finger up to your computer and use your finger. Well, maybe you could.
No, you could. No, they have those things, that like a fingerprint thing. Some computers already have them. They say there's other ways. I'm not sure. I was reading there's a lot of different ways to do it.
Right.
So we'll see what they're going to settle on. But passwords are so easily stolen now, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying, you know, I mean, just about anybody probably has his passwords taken.
I think that's what they did with eBay.
Yeah.
Like eBay too. And then,
yeah.
And I mean, everyone was getting emails. I got, my mom got emails. Like everyone I knew that was on eBay got emails saying that their information had been
compromised.
Taken or, yeah, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah,
I don't remember that.
Because someone had hacked into eBay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty crazy, man. And, you know, I mean, this is the crime we have to deal with today. You know, on top of all the violence around the world,
right.
We have to deal with this shit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, those Russians are smart, you know?
Yeah.
They're very smart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many of them immigrated to Israel, Russian Jews. And they brought a lot of brain power to Israel, you know.
Right.
So engineering and science and things like that, you know, they're very good at that. So they're also good at stealing passwords, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like 1.2 billion. That's about as many people as are on Facebook alone.
But I think a lot of people would be, well, not a lot of people, but a lot of geniuses could, if they wanted to, could
right.
steal passwords.
That's and, true, yeah.
But not that many people are that
yeah.
malicious.
Yeah, exactly. They don't all use it for crime.
Exactly.
But all it takes is a couple of guys and that's it, you know.
Right.
But how do they do this, man? I mean, it's like, you know, from websites that I would imagine some of them very secure,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're managing to do that, which is crazy, you
yeah.
know. So, yeah, so that's why I'm saying, you know, fingerprinting, it might work, actually.
Maybe I should use that.
Yeah. I started to scare you now, right? Did you read who the highest paid actress is in Hollywood? It's actually Sandra Bullock, and she earned $51 million.
Oh, that wasn't what I was going to say, because I saw something on TV yesterday that said Judge Judy.
Really?
Was the highest paid. Yeah.
Maybe on TV?
And then maybe it was TV. Yeah.
Yeah,
and then the cast of The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, okay.
Like
so that's
three.
TV. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they were talking about Hollywood, about movies and stuff. So she made $51 million in 1 year.
Wow.
And the next one is Jennifer Lawrence, believe it or not. Came out of nowhere a few years ago.
Yeah.
Now she makes $43 million a year.
Wow.
I mean, what would you do with $43 million?
That's a lot,
you know?
I would do with $43 million.
And that's every year, you know?
But then after taxes, you're only getting one.
Oh, duh. So you get half of it. Oh, man.
I'd probably go on a lot of vacation.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Wow. There's nothing in the world you can't do. You see, that's why money is definitely power.
Yeah.
You got money, you can do anything you want.
But I was when... I saw the one on TV, about TV.
Mm.
Judge Judy
uh-huh.
earns the most out of all of the TV hosts. And
do you remember how much he makes?
No, they didn't
yeah.
say.
Yeah.
But I mean, out of all the big TV, like Oprah. And
right. Well, Oprah's not on TV anymore. That's why.
I think it was
Oprah
still
was...
counted, though. Because, well,
really?
She is on TV. She's on her own channel on OWN.
Right.
On OWN Network.
Yeah, but that doesn't count. Nobody watches.
I watch it.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But out of everyone, Judge Judy.
Uh-huh.
Judge Judy. And
yeah.
then out of all the shows, Big Bang Theory.
Really?
Yeah.
Very interesting. Wow. So all these people are making a lot of money while we're here, you know, playing with little poop. Playing with crap. That's what we're doing, man. In the sandbox with dog crap. Well, other people are making millions and millions of dollars, man.
43
just for,
to be exact.
Yeah, you know, just to be, you know, just for acting. I mean, for acting, for crying out loud, you know. It's not like they invented something, you know. Same with athletes and stuff, you know. I have big complaints about that. But obviously, people get paid proportionally to what they can bring in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they couldn't bring in at least as much money, they wouldn't be making that much. So they have that drawing power,
yeah.
you know. And but again, still, for acting, for crying out loud. So I don't get it, you know. And then some people don't even do anything, like Kim Kardashian, you know. And Paris Hilton, they don't even do movies. They don't do anything and they're famous
in
and make
Kim
a lot
Kardashian's
of money.
Defense, and I never thought that I would defend her, but in Kim Kardashian's defense, she does have a TV show that rakes in so much money for E.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah. What's that, a reality show just following her around?
Yeah, keeping up with the Kardashians.
Because I just
they're on something like the 12th season.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
May even be more.
Yeah. People love that crap, you know? Oh, Guilty pleasures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, just for filming her first wedding, the money that they would have got from that is just craziness.
I know, I know. And now they put out a video game that revolves around her. Did you see that?
Yeah.
With her image and everything.
Crazy.
Yeah, and you have to... well, I think the objective is to get rich and famous without doing anything.
Well, she got rich and got famous because of a sex tape.
Right, exactly. Yeah. A lot of effort there, right? To get famous. And finally, before we get to our guest who's sitting here patiently and seems very interesting, I just wanted to bring this up because, I mean, those Muslims keep on being more and more ridiculous all the time. Now in Turkey, they want to ban women laughing in public. Yeah.
Yikes.
What do you think of that, Charlotte?
Well, they're just trying to take away the whole female...
Yeah, everything.
Female's identity.
Castrate them completely, even though they don't have balls still. Yeah. Castrate them completely. And because women are viewed as possessions in these religions, you know, as objects, you know, and it's like, I mean, so, you know, the thing is that, so what happens is they're saying there's more than 160,000 tweets with women posting pictures of themselves laughing in public, you know.
Good for them.
So yeah, despite that, but but it's so absurd.
Yeah,
that you know it doesn't even you know deserve any commenting, and they do this all the time there, and they're saying that you know in Turkey they really try to separate religion from politics and stuff. No luck there, man.
It's really sad.
Yeah, it really
That's
is
the way that they have to live.
Yeah. But, and this is the least of it, you know, and then you go to those places like Afghanistan and Yemen and, and, you know, even in India, Saudi Arabia, all these countries where women are viewed as second class citizens, you know, and like possessions and stuff. So, yeah, so that sucks, you know, and I guess these women don't know any better. There's nothing they can do. They're just pretty much stuck in that situation.
Yeah.
They don't know any better.
Exactly. They haven't lived anywhere else to know that that's not what.
Right, and they don't let you leave very easily either, you know. They want you to stay in that stinking system, that rotten system, you know, because otherwise they wouldn't have anybody to govern.
Right.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get to our guest now. You can go ahead and get close to the mic now. We have Peter Woolley in the studio. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yes.
At my age, it's nice to be anywhere.
Yeah. Huh? May I ask how old you are?
I'll be 80 in December.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. You're still in great shape.
I am in pretty good shape.
Yeah, you are.
My wife, who is 6 months younger than I... looks like my daughter, however.
Really?
So God bless.
Wow.
God bless my eyes.
A lucky man then, huh?
Yeah, we've been married for 59 years now.
Wow.
We were childhood, no, I'm sorry, 57 years.
Right.
We were childhood sweethearts.
Yeah.
We met when we were in grammar school.
Really?
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
So you really were childhood sweethearts.
Yeah. really.
I mean,
we really were. I hadn't even discovered testosterone yet.
Yeah, I mean, wow. So that was like soulmates from the beginning, pretty much, huh?
Yeah, kind of. We just can't ignore it. It's there.
Yeah.
It's there.
Now, let me ask you, though, along the way, I mean, that's a long time. Didn't you ever wonder what you were missing out on? I mean, you probably, like, she was your first and maybe only one, right?
Actually, I didn't miss out on a lot.
Uh-huh.
And when you're married to somebody like her, like Linda, you
don't feel you're missing out.
I don't feel like I'm missing anything.
Wow, that's cool.
And even after all these years, she's quite a lady.
Wonderful, wonderful. Oh. Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, there's not that many instances like this in Hollywood.
No, I'm really, we're really freaks of nature. just have you know, we've lived in the same house for 40 years.
Yeah.
For goodness sakes.
Yeah.
I mean, how boring can you be?
Yeah, well, if you can still stand each other, then it's meant to be, definitely.
My daughter, when she was in high school, would come home and complain and said, I don't have anything to talk about. You guys get along. Everybody else has such interesting parents.
I know, interesting parents. Yeah.
That's so sad, because it should be that you guys are interesting because you have a great relationship, but everyone focuses on the negatives now.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. That's part of our life these
days. Yeah, well, stories are mainly of conflict and stuff, you know, that's what life is about, you know, trials and tribulations. I'm sure you've had your own share and stuff too, but I think when you have each other, it's easier to deal with.
Well, you know, we've always had each other to lean on. Mm-hmm. She has always been rather independent, and that helps because, well, you know, she would not be a good Muslim lady.
No, huh? No. She loves to laugh.
No, she's a laugher and she's a doer.
And very good.
And
very
good. If you give her a burqa, she'll try to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah, right. Like crawl out of it or something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The first thing she'd do, I'm sure, is put a belt on it.
Awesome. So for those of you wondering who Peter is, you're a production designer,
yes,
and you've worked on some major movies.
Oh, yes.
And then you also came out with a book recently, right?
Yes.
Wonderful. I mean, that's a lot of creative stuff.
I am busier. I was looking for a job the other day just so I could get some rest.
Really?
You know, I'm producing a film that we're in post-production. It's called Hybrids. It stars Paul Sorvino and Carolyn Hennessy.
Oh, wow.
We're in post. That's moving along with alacrity. We're missing some CGI stuff that we're still waiting on, and that kind of thing. The music is doing well.
Right.
The color's been timed. We're in good shape.
Very good.
The first book I wrote, I released on 9/11.
Really?
To the sound of one hand clapping.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. The same year, 2001?
It was at 9/11.
Really?
One of my signings was at 9/12 or 9/14, something like that.
Really? Where were you? Here?
I was here.
You were
here?
Yes,
yes. This was a funny book. As a matter of fact, to get through this in a hurry, the first book did well. It's out of print. I bought it from the publishers and added four chapters, put another cover on it, and it is due out this week.
Oh, wow.
On Amazon.
Yeah,
and along with my novel, which I'm here to talk about today, because, gee, it's good.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading.
You love it, it's good. Get a little closer to the mic, though.
It's so funny. You know, I haven't. I've always done work where it is judgeable, you know, as a designer, as a whatever it is, as a director, as a producer, whatever I have decided to do with my life, it's judgeable.
Mm.
And so one tends to judge oneself very quickly. And because of the Amazon not giving me good galley prints in the beginning, I had to keep reading the thing through.
Really,
which is really can really be painful.
Yeah,
but I was reading it and I'm thinking, gee, I said that.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice? I said that.
Isn't that amazing, though? I mean, when you look back on stuff you write, because you write, too. You have a blog and everything. I know. It's amazing how you can express yourself in writing a lot better than speaking sometimes, you know?
Well, yes. Absolutely. And, of course, now with the computer and everything, it's really easy to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quick.
Yeah. Instant, right?
And it's also erasable. Mm. You know, I mean, it doesn't get out of my computer until I'm ready for it to leave.
Right.
Right.
And then I will kick it right in the ass.
I know. Do you post stuff on Facebook and stuff like that?
I did for a long time. I've been having a problem with Facebook. I think Facebook, this is weird. I think Facebook decided that I was putting something on there that shouldn't be there. Either that or Google decided my server.
Mm-hmm.
And they both turned on me.
Really?
Wouldn't communicate with me. Are currently holding all of my contact information, and I can't get it. I've got to get a doctor in to take my computer apart and figure out what the heck is going on. But boy, I've had a tough time lately.
Yeah.
But it is. My God, it's there for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
you've lived many years, so you've seen the world change. Man. My dad is 80 years old also. And so you were born in the 30s.
Yeah, 34.
34. And my dad was born 33. And you've been through so much. I mean, you've seen the world change so many times.
Oh, my God, you have no idea. I mean, I remember when an airplane would go over, you'd look up and try to find it.
Yeah, huh?
I know. There just wasn't any.
I know. And it was, like, fun to fly, actually, at one point.
Yeah, and we went out. I just heard someplace, I don't know where it was, that I guess it was television last night. Some mother got arrested for letting her 7-year-old daughter walk to school.
Yes, we were talking about that the other day. A 7-year-old.
You know, I'm thinking when I was 7 years old, I would go out in the morning and never come back.
We have
over cleansed ourselves. We're oversimplifying everything. We're either that or complicating everything. We're throwing a girl out of school for taking an aspirin. You know, we're doing stupid things.
Right.
And we're doing it as a society. Right. Here I am preaching. Forget it. Never mind.
No, that's okay. That's your opinion. I mean, that's fine. That's what you're here for.
But no. I'm here for is to tell you about my wonderful book.
Okay, and we'll talk about the book, too. I mean, don't worry about it. We'll get to the book. It's just that we want to find out a little more about you and stuff also. So where were you originally born? Were you born here?
No. I always say we because, you know, Linda's been with me. We were in kindergarten, actually, I am told. Long before I discovered testosterone, by the way.
Yeah.
We were in kindergarten together, my wife and I. That's how far back we go.
Wow.
Little town in Ohio called East Liverpool.
Really?
It's on the Ohio River.
Uh-huh.
It's about 40 miles from Pittsburgh. Across the Ohio River from East Liverpool is West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And the eastern city limits of the town is Pennsylvania.
Whoa.
Funny little place up there.
Really? Yeah. Is it pretty there?
It's absolutely beautiful if we could just get the people out of
here. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the people, we can manage to foul up anything. But my God, it's the Ohio Valley, with the great Ohio River running through it and the rolling Appalachian Mountains. And oh my God, it's beautiful.
Wow.
But it's in the Rust Belt. It's one of those towns that are dying.
Mm.
So anyway, that's where we were born and raised, went to school. My wife went to, I graduated first, went to the Navy because I knew I could go to college on the GI Bill.
Oh, wow. What year was that? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was 52.
52.
Yeah.
You went into the service.
And I went into service in 52. My wife graduated from high school in 53 and went to the Pasadena Playhouse for a year. And studied acting
So you decided you're going to move here?
She became a singer. No, actually, she was singing. And I was still in the Navy. I got out of the service, in 3 years, whatever it was. And by that time, she had gotten out of Pasadena Playhouse, gone to New York, and started a career as a singer.
Oh, wow.
And she was singing in Vegas at the old Dunes Hotel.
Really?
And I showed up one day and said, this enough of this. You know, really enough of this. And so we came to L.A. This was right after I got out of the service. Mm-hmm. We came to L.A., got married here at Forest Lawn. Oh, wow. Which is a really nice place to get married, by the way.
Yeah.
And like Linda says, that's the flowers are already there.
That's cemetery, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Forest Lawn.
Yeah.
So you get married in the cemetery?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. There's a couple of chapels there.
Oh, okay.
Wonderful.
Really?
Yeah. There's a Celtic chapel on the hill that is the Church of the Recessional. And 50 years later, to the day, to the minute, we got remarried there.
Wow.
And we had eloped before.
Really?
You know, the first time.
Uh-huh.
There was no one there. And then we eloped because, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. Linda said the flowers were free. I think it cost us like $25 plus the minister or something. Of course, now we decide to throw a 50th wedding anniversary wedding for all of our friends, and it costs just about as much as the national debt of Poland. But it was we had a wonderful time.
But it was
great
worth
to have all of our friends and now family and grandchildren and all of those all of those warm and fuzzy things that really keep us going.
Yeah. Definitely. So how many children do you guys have?
74.
74 children.
No, I'm only kidding.
Okay.
We have two, one of each. My daughter, Stephanie, is a year and a half or 2 years older than my son, Christopher. Mm. They have, my son, Christopher, has one child. His name's Tucker. Stephanie has two, Katie and Anthony. Anthony was, speaking of Israel, was over there as a guest during the startup of this last ruckus.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, he was a guest of the state. He's 19. He's got all the good things and he's Jewish.
Oh.
And he's got all the good things that they would like to have over there.
Wow.
And so they have this
program.
This program.
Right.
And leave it to Anthony to show up in the middle of a bombing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Boy, his mother and his grandmother were just beside themselves.
I bet. That's scary.
Sure. And he didn't tell us until he got back. He just got back 2 days ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, so he really was in the middle of it. Has he said anything about what it was like to be there?
Well, he said they made a couple of bomb shelter runs.
Yeah.
You know, he said he didn't want to tell anybody because he kept in touch, you know. With the phone and everything.
Right.
But God bless him. Now he's talking about maybe going back.
I know. It grows on you when you go to Israel. It doesn't matter war or no war, you know. There's just a lot going on. It's a different kind of place.
Yeah.
It really is. Have you been? You haven't been?
No.
No.
That's the one place in the world I haven't been. I've been to North Africa, and I've been to Italy and Turkey. Spent a lot of time on an island in the middle of the Aegean doing movies. And, I've traveled a lot. But I never got to Israel. And, Jesus.
Well, maybe one day.
One of these days. I plan to be around for a while.
Yeah, there you go. That's the attitude to take. So you got out of the service. You guys lived here. And then what did you decide to do with your life?
I had been working for an architect in East Liverpool, Ohio, when I got out, right after I got out of the service. And so I came out here, and Linda and I was, we found a little apartment down by Paramount. I was looking for a job in the paper as a draftsman, saw an ad for a drill master in a military academy, and I'd just gotten out of the service. I said, what the hell, I can do that.
Yeah.
So I went and interviewed for the job, and I became the assistant commandant of St. John's Military Academy.
Really?
Down on Washington Boulevard. and that only lasted a year because I had made arrangements to go to Kent State and study architecture. So then we moved back to Ohio, went through the whole architecture thing at Kent State, and we fell in love with Southern California, and I came back out here to be the next Frank Lloyd Wright.
Wow.
And then a dirty old arm reached out in an alley some way and grabbed me and said, here, and they took me in, and it was Warner Brothers.
Really?
And so I went to work at Warner Brothers.
Wait, but how did they discover you?
They didn't. I discovered them.
Okay.
I God's your co-pilot sometimes. I got an interview with the head of the art department at Warner Brothers on the phone took some of my drawings in, talked to him, went to work the following week for wow. a princely sum of like $350 an hour. This is in 64.
Mm.
And never looked back, never went back to architecture.
Right.
And worked my way up to becoming a production designer.
Wow.
Immediately. And been hanging on ever since. Retired from that and have produced a couple of things in the meantime.
Very cool. And we'll talk about those. Now, I've always been wondering about production designer. Tell us a little bit about what it is, that you do. I mean, obviously, if you're an architect, it probably involves like drawings and things like that,
oh, yes.
right?
Oh, yes.
So you decide how something's going to look?
Yes.
Wow.
Here's what happens. You read the script.
Right.
You talk to the director. You decide that both of you are going to make the same movie. And that doesn't always happen.
Right.
And, you know, and then you have your agent make the most money he possibly can for you. And then you go to work. And I begin to interpret what I call translating words into pictures.
Uh-huh.
And I start to do that with sketches and with looking at locations, traveling, figuring out where this should be, what it should look like, in constant hourly communication, if possible, with the director.
Right.
Sometimes just verbally, you know. Mm. I've got this thing I want you to see, and I'd like to rewrite that thing because this would be better if that, and I got this, you know.
Right.
So it's that kind of creativity that just keeps going.
Yeah.
And by the time you're ready to start shooting the movie, I'm pretty much finished.
Yeah,
creatively.
You're done with it. Yeah.
I like not to be, so I stay on the set as much as I possibly can.
Right.
Therefore causing as much trouble as I possibly
right.
can.
But you want to see it through. You want to make sure that it comes out the way that you
know.
Right.
Again, it's a creative process that involves a lot of people. It's not like painting.
Right.
It's not like writing a song or writing a book. Right. It's a gangbang, if you will. I mean,
right.
there's a whole lot of people doing a whole lot of work on one little script.
Right.
How long does it take to decide all that, to pick the location, the actual location that you think will fit perfectly and coordinate that with the director and everything else?
It's interesting you should ask that, because it varies entirely on a couple of things. And I guess the most important thing would be that how much time the studio will give me, mm-hmm. you know, how much prep time that they'll let me have. And that means how big is my staff, how much I have to travel, how much, you know. And so the prep time is always doing this. It's always one picture, it's this. Next picture, it's this.
Okay, but nobody right. can see that. Why don't you describe what you're doing? Because we're on the radio.
Isn't that funny? It's about that big. Can you see
yeah.
that, folks? No, I was just saying that the prep time is like life. It's
right.
short,
it changes.
Very wide.
Okay, got it. Got it. So you worked on some high-profile movies. I mean, you worked with Mel Brooks on at least a couple. I see here, Blazing
yeah.
Saddles and High Anxiety.
Yeah, and I also did a picture for his company called Fatso that Annie Bancroft, his wife, wrote and directed.
Yeah,
and I got to be good friends with Annie. Hey, Annie.
Yeah.
I got to laughing one day. We were talking about something, and she was saying. She was looking at a drawing of a plan of one of the apartments in Fatso, and she's looking at it. She says, "Hey, Peter, where are the stairs?" I said, "What? The stairs? Where are the stairs?" I said, "Jesus, I've been in love with you all these years, and all these years you've been working in dialect." She was abroad from the Bronx,
really.
And,
wow.
I mean,
that's
she had
Anne Bancroft.
Yeah, she had this marvelous. Clear actress's voice, but in truth, she talked like this.
Yeah, really.
She talked like that great lady you had on Monday.
Who was that? Do we remember? who we had on Monday?
The couple with
yeah, that's right, yes. The New Yorker. Yes. Yes.
I love to hear her talk, man. She tickled me.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you for listening to the show. That's cool that you prepared a little bit for the show. That's cool. So when you have credits with a movie like this, like Blazing Saddles, does that mean that you pretty much were involved with the entire movie, every scene you designed? Wow.
Yeah. What a production designer does is, or what his job is in a sentence, in a word, is he's responsible for everything you see on the screen except the actors.
Right.
And in some cases, even the actors. Like, I remember once I was doing, way back in my career, I was doing a series called Make Room for Granddaddy with Danny Thomas. It was a remake of his original show. And he needed a tattoo on his chest. So I designed a tattoo, you know, with a camel and a palm tree and some stuff. Right. And then he came in early one morning, and I laid him down on a table and drew on his chest. So even the actors we get involved with, but the production designer is responsible for the look of everything.
Wow. Well, I'm definitely going to go back and watch these movies. You know, I mean, yeah, because it was really cool.
It was an interesting thing on Blazing Saddles. You know, that was a picture that was so outrageous. So over the top, so completely, you weren't even born.
Right, yeah. 1974. Wow.
So what do I do visually with that? See, do I make it as silly as the writing? Or do I do a reality thing? Do I make the Western really real?
Right.
And I made the decision to make it real, except a couple of places.
Okay.
So it looks like any other Western,
right?
Except that there are you know, like the saloon was painted red.
Yeah, it's a really funny movie, Charlotte. You need
I'll
to
have
catch
to watch
this.
It. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, yeah, Mel Brooks is a genius in comedy and filmmaking and so forth.
He certainly is that.
Yeah.
We still keep in touch. He did a blurb, so cute. He was, when my first book came out in 9/11, just when the first Galleys came out, I sent him, said, "Could you give me a blurb for the back of the book?" And I was doing something here in town, and the book was just about to get published, and Mel was in Chicago doing the prep for producers, getting it ready for Broadway.
Right.
And it was about 10 at night, and he called. And he was in Chicago, so it was after midnight. He says, get a pencil. I said, "Well, I got a pencil. What?" He says, "Write this down." So he gives me his blurb.
Wow, you know? Cool.
And then he sang me the entire score of the producers on the phone.
Wow.
Very. Wow.
Very cool.
So you've done this for, how many years have you been in production?
I've been in the business since 64, so that would make me 50 years.
That's quite a bit, 50 years old.
Yeah.
50 years, wow. Yeah. That's pretty much. So you've got quite a body of work, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And so then let's get to the book now. How did the idea for a book come about for you?
Well, my first book came because it's a compendium of movie silliness, crazy things that have happened to me or I've taken part in or, you know, in the business. It's a fun book. It's a good, quick read. I call it the greatest bathroom read you'll ever get.
Really? And it's based on truth, right?
Yes. I mean, it's all true.
It's a nonfiction.
So I'm sitting around one day, and I'm thinking, geez, I'm 50 years, almost 50 years in the business. I wonder how many scripts I've read. I have no clue. But it's got to be hundreds. Because I've done almost hundreds, you know?
Right.
And all the ones that I've read that I didn't do, or, you know, for whatever reasons, or read them as a, you know, as a judging process or something for the Academy. I do that a lot. But I thought, I don't want to write a script. You know, everybody in Hollywood's got one of those under their arm.
That's true, yeah.
And I don't want to do that. I'd just rather not. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
My partner, Tony Schweichel, who is the other producer on Hybrids, wrote the Hybrid script. And, of course, I was with him most of the steps of the way, and I would say, why aren't they moving from one room to the next, and, you know, this kind of thing. But at the same time, I'm writing this book. And Tony is reading my book and saying, how come this guy doesn't do this? So we're really helping one another.
Right.
But I decided to write a book about friendship, about what it means to stay together as friends for a long time, and what it takes. And so I wrote a book about three guys who meet in the 50s and go through 50 years of their lives.
Wow.
I bet it's so interesting.
Yeah,
and
it's a novel.
Funny book. It's a funny book.
Right.
It's, look at me. Geez, how could I write anything that wasn't funny? This is radio, isn't it? So I can describe to the people what I really look like.
You look fine. Relax. You look great.
Actually, I'm about 6'3", blonde, and have a whippy build.
Yeah. In other words, he's Brad Pitt, but you can't see that.
How is it writing a nonfiction compared with writing... writing fiction compared with writing nonfiction?
Well, it's a bitch. The only way I could actually do it is I wrote it in first person. So I could stay in there with it, you know, and then I wrote it, and it was too cute.
Yeah.
And I wrote it in third person.
Yeah.
And then I went back and wrote it in first person again, and that's what's come out.
Oh, okay.
And there is a modicum of truth through the book, because one should know that if the you should write what you know.
Right.
And these three guys are not fictional, although they have fictional names, and they live sort of fictional lives, but not really. I mean, it's an interesting... people who know me and who have read the book say, did he die? You know, and I say, no, he's fine.
Yeah. So you're based on real people, but you developed a story of your own.
I developed a story of my own around, and I used some real circumstances because they were interesting when they were happening. I lead a very interesting life, and interesting things happen to me, and I don't know why. You know, I'm one of those guys that walk down the street and I see the wreck.
Well, you know, everybody's got their journey.
Yeah, but anyway, these three guys are when they go through college together, when they graduate from college, they go their separate ways, but they maintain a relationship. As a matter of fact, in a week I'm headed up to Montana to meet one of them.
Wow, how cool.
Yeah.
Very nice. So you see, friendships like that, that's cool. They last a long time.
Yeah, and I wanted to show friendship. I wanted to do a buddy story without testosterone.
Yeah,
I did.
Like
I
bromance.
I didn't accept bromance. That's another word that's in our language now.
Yeah, there you go.
Jeez.
I was thinking about this today because, I mean, some guys really are close and stuff, and it has nothing to do with sexuality, you know? Just a bond between guys.
No.
Yeah, go on.
You're exactly right. It's a bond between guys. It is just something. It's like your wife.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Human beings are so interesting. I knew an old cowboy once named Fred Bassett. Was an old cowboy. I said, and we're out I was filming a documentary across the Montana prairie, and we have a wagon train of about 14 covered wagons and all the things for 6 days and nights, and I filmed it. Uh-huh. And I said, and the horses are all out there in the corral at night, or in the pens. I said, how do you know your horse from everybody else?
Right.
He said, well, how do you know your wife from everywhere? Oh, my God, you know. And friendship is like that. We don't know why we connect. Yeah. We have no idea what that is. I guess there are people who study that kind of thing.
Right.
But friendship is such a delicate thing. And it can get dicey.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, in my book, we fight for each other and we fight with each other.
Oh, wow.
As it should be.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's reality, you know. Uh-huh. It's not always roses, you know.
That's right.
The book is called You Only Go Around Once.
Yes.
And so the story starts in the 50s, you say, and
yes.
then it moves forward.
Mm-hmm.
And like to the present? Pretty much. I mean, does it go
pretty
as
much,
far as the present?
Pretty much. I don't really keep track of the TikToks, you know.
But it
takes me up until, it took us up until all the guys are in the 70s.
Okay. Okay. So it's still, so not till today. I mean, the whole book is taking place like some decades ago.
Yes.
Okay. Sounds good. So yeah, definitely this is something that you would know about. That's the time you were growing up and everything.
Impossible to make a movie out of this book, by
the way. Really?
Well, I mean, it would be very expensive because, it covers 50 years.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
You've got 50 years of vehicles, which is expensive. And then last but not least, you have at least six actors who have to age from 20s to 70s.
That's true, yeah.
And they, come on, makeup in the morning would be a madhouse.
Right.
It's interesting, though, because these days, I mean, the likeliness of a 50-year-old, well, especially not relationship, but friendship is very rare, and it doesn't seem to be what it used to be.
Well, we don't write letters anymore either and send them and lick the envelope and put a stamp on it and send it in the mail. We just, and we're done. We've got our computers going for us.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's not, this. Everything's too quick now.
Yeah.
And everything is going too fast to actually hang on to friendships.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah, people are too busy and they're too self-involved.
Jeez,
and
I got to go to dinner tonight with these people and I don't, I love them to death, but I'd much rather not. And, funny.
Yeah, I mean, life happens. That's the point, And people go from one place to another. We're talking to Peter Woolley, of course. And so you have a film project. You mentioned Hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
And when is that projected to?
Well, we're hoping to get it into distributors' hands next month in September.
Oh wow! Very cool.
You're very busy, man.
Yeah, I really am. But then again, I did a picture years ago with George Burns.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God, you devil.
Oh, God, that's part two, right? Or part three.
Part three, right. And George said once, he was getting out of, I was helping him out of the car.
Uh-huh.
And he dropped something, and I picked it up for him. And he said, I don't bend down unless I have at least three things to do while I'm down there. and that's part of, you say I'm very busy. Well, I'm old and I can't work as quickly as I used to.
Right.
Boy, yeah, I hate losing it.
Yeah.
Jeez, I hate losing it. And that's one of the reasons I want to stay busy, because I don't want to lose the faculties.
Yeah.
The facilities.
Good for you. Good for you.
You know?
Yeah. And that's why you're still full of energy and everything.
Oh.
You know, you're moving about and stuff. That's great,
Oh, yeah.
And you should be obviously grateful and feel blessed that you're healthy and everything like that,
I'm not the picture of health. I've battled and beat prostate cancer. I have battled and beaten twice melanomas.
Wow.
Both with major surgeries. And I have done everything I could possibly do to abuse my body.
Wow.
Over the years.
Right.
I just have because I could.
Right.
And I'm the kind of guy that says, sure, let's have one more.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you've lasted and you managed to do very well, and that's a good thing. Peter Woolley, thank you so much for joining us.
Everybody, go out. Fascinating man.
So the book is coming out next week, right?
Yes. This book is out.
It. Okay.
This book is on Amazon. Just go to Amazon and punch in my name, and it comes up. You only go around once.
Sounds
but
good.
But as Joey Lewis once said, you only go around once, but if you do it right, that's
once
all you
enough.
Need.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Peter, very fascinating. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sam.
It's been a pleasure having you and learning about movie making and things like that, you know. So now I'll go back and watch these movies looking at them in a different way, you know.
Thank you.
You were behind it.
Thank
you. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow.
In morning radio, tune into Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, only on LA Talk Radio.